This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
This is your current affairs program, The Rainbow Report, on Joy 94.9.
Good evening, Doug Pollard here with you once more with another program of news and current affairs. This has been a pretty momentous week for gays and lesbians in the USA. Just today, New Hampshire became the sixth US state to legalize same-sex marriage. To mark Gay Pride Month, both President Barack Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton issued supportive proclamations in which, among other things, Obama praised the work of LGBT organizations for their work for equality and committed himself to the same cause, while Clinton pledged the US to fight for gay rights abroad. Here in Oz, the government still refuses to engage with the issue of marriage equality, and arguments are raging about whether Rainbow Labour, the gay caucus within the party, should be pushing for national civil unions or gay marriage or both at the upcoming party conference. Are civil unions a stepping stone to full marriage equality, as they argue, or do they represent an apartheid-style second-class status that we should refuse? Michael Vaughan of Rainbow Labour and John Klopbrugger of Australian Marriage Equality will be giving us their different views later in the show. One of the few politicians who has publicly supported same-sex marriage is Victorian Education Minister Bronwyn Pike, and she'll be joining us to talk about the policy she's put in place to support sexual diversity in schools. And finally, a story which appeared to have faded away suddenly came back to life again. Rob Mitchell's long campaign to get the AFL to specifically address sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination finally succeeded. AFL boss Andrew Demetriou announced the change this week. Rob's with us in the studios. I bet that feels good, doesn't it, Rob?
I think it's a really good step forward, not only for us as a community, but also for the AFL and also the broader community.
Me too. Well, in a moment we'll be hearing more about it from the AFL Corporate Affairs Manager and former Herald Sun Sports Editor Brian Walsh. With me also in the studio, Cathy Anderson, who's been keeping my chair warm while I've been away. Thanks a lot for that.
Oh, my pleasure. Everyone behaved themselves nicely, so yeah, all went well.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. It's nice to know everything was in good hands. It allowed me to relax on the beach very pleasantly. And of course,
have you got swine flu or something?
And of course, somebody who got referred to the other day as a reporter on this program, he's not, he's a guest of ours, and that's Corey Earlham from the Australian Coalition for Equality. You're on this show too often, that's the problem.
I'm absolutely having the pleasure to be a guest and not a reporter. Less work and more fun.
And Kay Sarah this week has been venturing out of her comfort zone, visiting Generation Y. She'll report back from the battle zone. On Sunday, AFL boss Andrew Demetriou announced that the AFL's anti-discrimination policy would now cover sexual orientation and gender identity. The wording of the vilification rules now extends to prohibit vilification, quote, on the basis of a special disability, which includes a disease or illness, or sexual orientation, preference, or identity. Joining us on the line now, we have AFL Corporate Affairs Manager Brian Walsh. Good evening, Brian.
Good evening, Doug.
Well, that's very good news. Why now?
I think it's probably been a long time coming, Doug. We had, and Rob, I know, spoke about this last year, but I mean, Rob came in and met with a couple of us, I think it was early last year, to talk about it. As a result of that, I think it started an internal discussion. We'd always had, with the vilification policy, that it actually did cover all forms of vilification. But
yeah, that was the understanding that we had from you, that you said, although it didn't mention it, it covered it.
Yeah, but it certainly didn't explicitly cover the areas of sexual orientation or identity or preference or in fact, disability. So while it was, well, it actually did cover any form of vilification. It was silent on those two areas. And I think the point was well made by Rob when he came in that that in fact it would be a better policy and would certainly give comfort to a lot more people and also make a strong stance if we actually did change that. There was work done on that over towards the end of last year and early this year, and then it went before the Commission at its last meeting and was passed by the Commission. So,
well, Rob's here now actually busily polishing his halo and basking in your words. Rob.
Brian, firstly, congratulations. I think it's a real step forward. And I just want to run some quotes past you, and this will sort of become apparent in a minute. James Molino, the Minister's Office, applauds your decision. Chris Waits, the Acting CEO of the Victorian Human Rights Commission, fully supports what you've done. The Graham Innes, the Federal Human Rights Commissioner, congratulates you on extending your vilification policy. Further afield in the UK, leading human rights advocates have described this as inspired and compelling sports administration. So,
your turn to polish your hair.
Look, congratulations on inspired and compelling sports administration. But I guess what I wanted to say was, I mean, the quotes from the UK are particularly interesting because I think up until now, I think it's probably been widely acknowledged that the round ball football they play over there, they've probably been a bit ahead of everybody else with the vilification stuff they've been doing around homophobia. I know you get it because of your history in the media and also what you're doing now, but do your colleagues and also the players understand that with Twitter, with Facebook, with MySpace, with all those social networks, do they understand the messages that you're sending are actually reverberating around everywhere and are not only locally here recasting the AFL, but are doing it globally?
I'm not sure that they probably understand the extent of it, Rob. And I know Andrew, today, we were talking this morning and he'd received a number of emails and messages from people similarly applauding the move. And I think it's probably over the last few days it's a reinforcement of the message that you brought in last year about how important this is. In one sense, I think there are probably some people that think, well, it's only a couple of words that have changed, but in fact, it's far more than that. And Andrew actually spoke at a lunch today in which he referred to it again as to the moves that we'd made, and reinforced the message that vilification and discrimination of any kind, whether it's whether based on gender or race or religion or sexual orientation or identity, is unacceptable in all its forms. And certainly that's a message that we're pretty keen to send through our game, not just at AFL level but across the community and all levels of football, that it is unacceptable in any of its forms.
Cathy Anderson.
Brian, Cathy here. Firstly, congratulations on the move. I think it's brilliant. For a lot of people out there in the community, there's a lot of lobbyists who we often get up there and and say we want a lot of things in terms of equality. I know you've talked a lot about how you had these meetings last year. How much of an influence did Rob's concerns have on the policies of the AFL? Is it something that you were considering before but just had on the back burner, or is that really something that has come from him?
No, I think to give credit where it's due, Rob was one who started a conversation. I still remember a conversation a few of us had internally following the discussions with Rob, and it sort of seemed to be, in one step it was first, well, why doesn't it cover that? And I think the second point was, well, of course it should. Now, under the wording of it and the understanding of it was that, in fact, it did cover vilification of any kind. But, again, to go back to the key point, is that it didn't explicitly say that. And while, the understanding might have been that it did cover that area, I think there was a pretty wide understanding, and certainly across the legal department in here very quickly, Simon Lethlean and Andrew Dillon, and across all the members of the executive, and Andrew, is that it wasn't I don't think there was any, there certainly wasn't an opposition view put up to that change. It was, we had a busy period probably over the second half of last year with things in terms of expansion of the game that took up a fair bit of time for both the executive and the commission.
Yeah.
But it was put through this year, and certainly there was never a view in here of anyone sort of having an opposing view. I think it was just seen as common sense.
Okay, Brian, I want to cut you off there for a moment because we haven't got an awful lot of time.
I
do want to ask you. Okay, you've got the policy. You've now stated the policy. What's the practical application of that policy?
Yeah,
what's the next step?
With what we do is that basically all the players every year, and certainly all the new players that come into the competition, are actually taken through all the policies. There's an induction period and an education period on the policies. And certainly all the players will both at club level and all those new players, every new player that comes into our game as a recruit, will go through an education period program as to exactly what this policy means, and it'll be pretty clear and obvious to all.
Is that parcelled up with all the other vilification stuff, or is there something specific and separate about the sexual orientation and gender identity component?
No. It'll all be pulled into the same education program, Doug. It'll be... And the point will be well made that vilification, it doesn't matter what type it is, and certainly in this area, that it's unacceptable.
Okay, Corey Earlham from the Australian Coalition for Equality.
Brian, when I got stopped by a drag queen in the street on Sunday and told about this, I was bowled over, I raced home, I looked on the web, and it was true. It wasn't her Sunday morning fantasy land. But when I started looking at it before I did the media release, I noticed that the racial and religious vilification policies won a UN award. It's been adopted around the world. It's something quite big that I thought I didn't realise because I'm not a sporting person. How do you see this policy on sexual orientation coming to life throughout the football community beyond just its players and officials? Does the AFL intend to tackle homophobia in the same way that it tackled racial vilification 10, 12 years ago?
I think what really the racial vilification one's probably a pretty good example is it what really started as a policy and as a reaction, and that one was a little bit different in that it actually developed from a couple of instances of Indigenous players being vilified on field, and eventually and thankfully saying this actually hurts me, not just on the field, but I carry that hurt off the field and it's having an impact on my life. And as a result, the policy was brought to life. From that, there's a lot of things that have come in about access to our game, is that we've now got about 11% of our players are Indigenous, because we've actually set a policy that said that you are welcome, that you're equal. Part of our game.
Brian, you're not trying to tell me that the policy is going to lead to somebody coming out. That's unlikely.
Look, I don't know about that. I've got no doubt that there are gay players playing our game.
Sure.
No doubt that gay players have played our game, and whether one comes out, I don't think in the football community, and this might come as a surprise, I'm not sure it's an issue for the football community. I would certainly hope it's not. It's certainly not an issue in this building.
I agree with you, but I guess where my question's going is in regards to the fans that shout out, oh, you're a faggot, etc. Does the AFL have intentions to tackle the football community and educate them about homophobia?
Look, I think I think the issue with our fans is that, and to go back to the point about the racial abuse, is that tackling something on the field had an immediate, or not an immediate impact, probably a long-term impact on what happens in the crowds. Is that what was unacceptable on the field became unacceptable off the field in our...
So you're hoping for a kind of an impact from...
I'd be disappointed if that didn't happen, because I think when people start to understand that it's unacceptable for players, is that they start to understand it's unacceptable for everyone, not just on the footy field, but in the stands, hopefully in the schools, hopefully everywhere, that if they can take an example from it, that you just you know, one, there's no need for it. Two, it's unacceptable. Three, every person deserves to be treated with respect.
Well, I think that's a very great step forward, Brian. We're going to have to leave it there because our next interviewee has just come online for us. We could talk about this all night, I suspect, and we'll doubtless talk about this again in future. But for the moment, thank you very much for your time tonight.
Pleasure. Thank you.
That was AFL Corporate Affairs Manager Brian Walsh. We actually have Victorian Education Minister Bronwyn Pike to talk about the policy to combat homophobia in schools. That's after this.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
Informing, entertaining and provoking. This is the Rainbow Report.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you. With me in the studio, Corey Earlham, Cathy Anderson and Rob Mitchell. Now, teachers who ignore homophobic abuse or bullying in Victorian schools, according to a report in the press, could face action under state equal opportunity laws for authorising or assisting discrimination, according to a new policy announced by Education Minister Bronwyn Pike, who joins us on the line now. Good evening, Bronwyn.
Hello, Doug. How are you going?
I'm going very well. It's a long time since we've spoken.
I know, it is a while.
I was hoping to see you in here in person, but never mind. Maybe the next time.
We've had Parliament this week, and we finished really late, so I'm sorry I couldn't make it in tonight, it's good to talk to you anyway.
Never mind. Now, explain to us what this policy is about.
Well, look, we've released a document that's entitled Supporting Sexual Diversity in Schools, and really what this document does is provide resources to schools so that they can, as you said, act within the Equal Opportunity Act and ensure that there is no discrimination against young people on the basis of sexual orientation. But it goes further. It really says that we have to work very hard to combat homophobia in our schools, and we have to create a culture of acceptance so that young people who are dealing with issues of their own sexuality or who may have come out feel safe and secure, feel comfortable and don't feel discriminated against and aren't discriminated against.
Yeah, because you're obviously very familiar with the Writing Themselves In and Writing Themselves In Again reports.
Absolutely.
Which show where some of the unsafest places for children is actually in the schoolyard if they're same-sex attracted or think they might be, or even perceived to be, even if they're not.
Yes, and I think that's the point. I think that, you know, young people, particularly in high school, are exploring their sexuality, and obviously as the hormones kick in, they become much more aware of this part of their lives, and you know, we might have to make sure that schools are safe places for that to happen, and that young people aren't really traumatised by unhelpful, unthoughtful or often quite conscious homophobic behaviour that can really be very damaging.
Minister, Cathy Anderson here. Look, I applaud this new initiative. I think it's excellent.
My
question is whether or not there seems to be, while you are placing all these books and information around for students, what's being done about educating teachers about this new initiative and making sure that they make those things available and don't put any of their perhaps homophobic or beliefs into practice?
Oh, look, absolutely, Cathy. The leadership does come from the teachers and, in fact, you know, right through the school. And so we're also making sure that we offer people to come out from the department to talk to schools, to talk to teachers. And, in fact, I've got some feedback here. You know, an assistant principal in an in Melbourne school said, you know, this is something we've all needed. I'm going to make sure we raise it at our very next staff meeting and that our school principal makes it required reading for the staff. And then, another person said that a guy came out from the department, talked us through the policy, noted that there are a lot of requirements on teachers to create a supportive school culture. So you're absolutely correct. That kind of leadership is really critical. And, look, sometimes teachers say stupid things. Sometimes teachers are, acting out of their own homophobic attitudes, and we just need to stamp that out.
Rob Mitchell.
Rob Mitchell, Minister. Firstly, congratulations, but I just wonder, You've got a lot of heavy lifting to do here. They're writing themselves in report out of La Trobe University, which I know you're well aware of. You know, something like 85% of the homophobic abuse that occurs to those young people occurs in either a school or sporting club setting. So I guess it's almost, you know, prescient that you're on after the AFL this evening. But I guess two parts to this question. I mean, how are you really going to put some air in the tyres in this where you've got, you know, teachers who, you know, just really won't toe the line? Are they going to get a kick up the arse because that's what they need? And part B is the schools, what control do you have over the schools that are sort of independent or have a religious background? Obviously, those kids, you know, are going to Catholic schools or going to other, you know, denominational schools. They've obviously got gay and lesbian kids there. How are we going to, you know, pull them into line? Because this is something that's been going on and on and on. And the last sort of data that I saw out of Dr. Lynn Hillier's report indicates that there's, like I said, there's a massive amount of heavy lifting to be done here.
Well, look, I mean, definitely in the government school system, people do have to comply with the Victorian Equal Opportunity Act and, of course, the Victorian Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities. And, you know, I'm pretty determined that where we have evidence that people are engaging in homophobic activity or where they are discriminating against young people on the basis of their sexuality or whether they're just being negligent, you know, in dealing with these issues, then, you know, we do have actions that we can take and that we, you know, we want schools to be able to report on these issues. And we're certainly, through student surveys, reviews of curriculum content, analysis of bullying and student welfare reports, you know, making sure that we can keep track of these things. As far as the non-government system is concerned, I mean, all non-government schools are registered in Victoria through the Victorian registration system, and you know, I think it is important that we make sure that through that system we keep tabs that they are complying with relevant government legislation, and but also that we share our knowledge and our experience.
So there's not going to be an out for them just because they're not state governments?
Well, absolutely not. I mean, I don't think there should be an out for anyone, and this is a very you know, as you've said, there's a lot of heavy lifting to do here, and it isn't.
Well, I don't doubt for a moment that you're across it, but I mean, anybody will tell you that this is, you know, there's plenty to be done. But
yeah, currently,
I absolutely concur, and you know, this is why at every level of government, in society more broadly, and look, I think the AFL have been terrific in offering leadership in this area, and you know, I think it's a great role model and example for other people in the community. But it's like anything, Rob. I think, you know, we have to be very persistent and diligent. I mean, who would have thought that, you know, a lot of the gains of the feminist movement in the 60s and 70s might have been eroded, where we still have, you know, shocking domestic violence, etc., in our community.
But
you know,
Bronwyn, can I interrupt you here, though, because we don't have a huge amount of time. But before we get off the subject of schools, and particularly religious schools, I mean, we have all kinds of exemptions to anti-discrimination law for religious organisations and bodies. How is that going to intersect with this policy in the case of religious schools? Because a lot of them are going to get up on their hind legs and say, we've got to be able to teach relatively anti-gay stuff because that's our belief.
Well, I mean, their primary purpose, if they're an educational organisation, is to equip young people to, you know, be able to fulfil their, you know, their dreams of being able to be well educated. And I would be very disappointed if they became opportunities for, you know, people to, you know, develop propaganda that was, you know, fundamentally discriminatory. But that's not to say that, you know, I think we all know that there are certain religious groups and social groups in our community that are bit unreconstructed, and you know, I certainly want to do everything I can as a community leader to appeal to them.
Minister,
sure, because I noticed the Australian Christian Lobby State Director said was very critical of this policy. He said this approach bordered on promoting a lifestyle rather than discouraging bullying.
Yeah, and it's just rubbish. Absolute rubbish, Mike. And let me add that our very own Liberal Party opposition actually almost tacitly concurred with this.
Yes, I saw that. He said it should be done in the family, in the wider community.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, like you deal with this in the family, in the community, but hey, you don't deal with it at school.
Well, that would be all very well if the family actually dealt with it, or the community in question actually dealt with it, but they don't, do they?
Right, and students spend a large amount of their time at school, and it should be a positive experience, and schools have an absolute obligation to make sure that the environment is inclusive and welcoming, because kids can't learn if it isn't.
No,
and Corey. It's also important to note that the Parliament's currently looking at these religious exemptions through an inquiry at the Standing Regulations Committee. Minister, it's Corey on from the Australian Coalition for Equality. Later in the show, we're talking about gay marriage and Rainbow Labor's view about civil unions or marriage. I'm wondering if you might be able to tell the listeners what your view is. You were at the Equal Love Rally last year supporting gay marriage. What's your take on civil unions or gay marriage at a federal level?
Well, look, I mean, I've made my position very clear publicly on this matter, and that is I do support gay marriage. I think that we should not have laws in this land that are discriminatory, and I think the current laws are. I think we need to take a long, hard look, basically, at the way that we think about marriage in our country. And I'm very attracted to some of the European models, which really say, look, religious and cultural organisations will celebrate unions in the way that's appropriate or relevant for them, but when it comes to the laws of the country, they can't really be exclusive or discriminatory. So
well,
that's my position.
I don't think you'd find anyone here to disagree with you, Bronwyn.
No, we're all nodding furiously, Bronwyn.
I'm clear about that, and I've felt that way for a long time, and I've said that publicly, and I'll do everything I can as an active member of my own political party to progress these matters. And, you know, I think we've come a long way in Victoria through the Relationships Register and a whole lot of other initiatives, but, you know, there's still more work to be done. And as I said, these things are a journey, and they're not about beating people over the head, but about really trying to educate the broader community, to bring people along. And I just think that the, you know, discrimination in terms of marriage is not an issue for younger people in our community. The tide is well and truly turned, and it's about time some of us oldies got on board.
Thank you, Bronwyn, and we really look forward to seeing what you say at the upcoming national conference.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there, Bronwyn. Thank you very much for your time tonight. Best of luck with it all, and obviously any assistance you need with the heavy lifting, you know where to come.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, that was State Education Minister Bronwyn Pike. It's time for a little break now. When we come back, we'll plunge headlong into a topic I know you all find endlessly fascinating. Should we continue to push for same-sex marriage, or should we settle for civil unions with representatives from Rainbow Labour and Australian Marriage Equality? That's after this.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
Keeping the GLBTI community up to date, this is the Rainbow Report.
Yes, welcome back. Doug Pollard here with Cathy Anderson, Rob Mitchell and Corey Earlham on the Rainbow Report. In fact, as we're going to be discussing gay marriage and civil unions, we'd quite like to know which of the two you prefer and what you understand to be a civil union, in fact, because there seems to be a lot of confusion about that. But, you know, we'd be interested to know, would you hold out for gay marriage or would you settle for a civil union? John's already SMS'd us to say, gay marriage ain't going to happen. Reality is it won't for at least 10 years. And in politics, the Liberals are likely to be in power again by then anyway, so forget about it. That's a very pessimistic viewpoint. In a week where a sixth US state has legislated equality in marriage, there's still actually no clear consensus here in Oz about the way forward. The Rudd government policy of having each state enact its own relationship recognition scheme to then be recognised by the Commonwealth is clearly failing. So should we be pushing for a national relationship register or civil union scheme? Some say yes. Others, including, I confess myself, see anything other than marriage equality as entrenching discrimination in law, an apartheid-style solution. Michael Vaughan, the convener of Rainbow Labour New South Wales, issued a statement last week that seemed to argue for civil unions as a stepping stone to gay marriage, but he's on the line now. Isn't it more of a roadblock?
I think that depends on what form of civil union scheme you're arguing for. I agree that we definitely shouldn't be pushing for a separate but equal civil union scheme. What Rainbow Labour believes we should introduce is a civil union scheme which is open to straight and same-sex couples that would ideally be in addition to marriage equality. So straight and same-sex couples would all have the choice to enter into a marriage or a civil union.
But surely it would be better to leave that entirely off the table at this point, to be arguing for gay marriage and have that as your fallback position if you can't get gay marriage through yet, rather than offer them an easy way out, a cop-out, by saying, well, we would support civil unions if you offered it.
But I think that that's misrepresenting the views of the gay and lesbian community as well, because, I mean, I know that there are people who would want to have a civil union who wouldn't want to get married for the institutional history of it. I mean, exactly the same reason that the Christian lobby would is so attached to the institution of marriage.
Yeah, but surely the argument there is that if you settle for civil unions now, you give them the opportunity to turn around and say, well, you've got equality because you've got civil unions, so shut up about marriage and go away, and you effectively put it off the agenda for the next 20 years.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about New England states, civil union schemes haven't put marriage equality off the agenda.
Well, they've already been through that. Why do we need to go through that and reiterate that?
I guess I'm just saying that 2 years between a civil union scheme marriage in New Hampshire isn't exactly a 20-year roadblock.
Michael, I guess the biggest concern for people that I talk to is that 5 years ago, when the civil union scheme was in chic or was fashionable, it was because we thought it was an acceptable option. But when we have the Rudd government responding to the 2020 summit about the recommendation for civil union, saying, no, we won't have same-sex marriage, often people are saying, well, hang on, there is no difference. It's going to be just as hard to get civil unions as it is to get marriage. How would you respond to that?
Well, I mean, I think that that's incorrect. I think that the lesson that we've learnt from the way that this issue has progressed internationally is that there is unfailingly a broader support base for civil union schemes than there is for marriage.
Why is that?
In the Australian context as well.
Why is that? Why is there better support for civil unions than it is for marriage? Is it because some people don't want to treat us equally in our relationships?
I think that because civil unions offer a path forward as a way of creating something new that can be accessed by straight and same-sex couples by creating a new institution, which I guess is founded on those secular values of equality between sexes and sexual orientation.
So it's easier?
Sorry?
It's easy to get civil unions, is that what you're saying?
I think that there's broader support within the community and within Parliament, yes.
Cathy Anderson.
Michael, just on that, in terms of your decision to promote civil unions, is that based on a combination or of community support? Like, is it what you think the community wants, or are you just predicting what you think that the Labor Party / federal government will probably, you know, go for?
Well, I should clarify at this point, sorry, that our submission and our campaigns, we've campaigned very actively on marriage equality, say, in the last 12 months, so that's something that we've got motions adopted by New South Wales Labor. We ran a float in the Mardi Gras about it. We called on full marriage equality on the Attorney General at a function that he attended that we hosted last year. That we don't see marriage and civil unions as being mutually exclusive.
Right, but... Yeah.
But so, Michael, just on that, but you're sending around motions to all the branches asking them to put in a motion on civil unions that has no mention of the word marriage. And people are saying that shows that Rainbow Labor is saying one thing to the community and a separate thing internally in ALP. How would you respond to that?
Well, I mean, I'd say that, for example, when I was at a branch in the Blue Mountains on Monday, that I talked to them and I said, we view marriage and civil unions as separate political goals in this debate. We've got a motion for civil unions in front of you. We support marriage equality, and that's something that I have to leave up to the branch.
Branch in Western Sydney supported marriage only and rejected civil unions. So there is a divergent view out there.
Yeah, well, listen, Michael, how's about this? And this is something I'm hearing increasingly, and someone's SMS'd in with this, in fact. In this day and age, we're supposed to have a secular government. Rather than persisting with any religious-based ceremony, why not make all unions straight and gay under a civil union bill which recognises both? That's from Grant in Albert Park. In other words, do away with the Marriage Act and replace it with a Civil Union Act and leave marriage just for the churches.
Yeah.
Now, why not campaign for that?
Well, I mean, I think that the fact is that the kind of PAX French way forward, which is to abolish marriage as something that the government's involved in, I think that's definitely an option forward, but the fact is that currently we have legislation, we have the Marriage Act, and that Marriage Act is discriminatory. So, I mean, I would be in favour of removing that discrimination, and I think that I, at least, haven't been a witness to a strong argument within the community to abolish
the involvement. Okay, Rob Mitchell, you want to come in here?
G'day, Michael. You've, in a sort of, not a throwaway, but you sort of said, well, we've got the Marriage Act, but it's discriminatory. Wouldn't we be better making the Marriage Act non-discriminatory? Because you're running sort of, I don't know, I'll call them parallel systems, where you've got the Marriage Act and then you've got, say, your Civil Unions Act. Practically, when the people are together, regardless of their gender and they have kids and they have property, you're not going to have two separate systems for putting them together and, of course, coping with the bust-up. I mean, particularly, it makes no sense to have parallel systems because the kids are the same regardless of whether they're in a civil union or a marriage, and the house doesn't know whether the partners that owned it were in a civil union or marriage, so you're going to have the one system there. So aren't we better off, as the call actually nailed it really well, I thought, from Albert Park, aren't we better off having what I'd call gender-neutral marriage, and then if you have that, you've got one system, and then that's the secular part of it. Now, if people will then want to go off and have their Roman Catholic celebration or their Jewish celebration or whatever...
As they do in France.
As they do in France. Isn't that the least complicated way of going about all this?
Sure, I guess, but in that assessment, you're ignoring the fact that in New Zealand, for example, where they have those parallel running schemes of the civil unions and of the marriage systems, that, I mean, one in five civil unions is taken up by straight couples who, for whatever reason, feel that that system better recognises their relationship. And I think that the fact is that there is a diversity in ways that people want to have their relationships recognised, and I don't think it's a bad thing for our relationship recognition system to accommodate that.
No, I don't think anyone would disagree with you, Michael, that what we actually need is root and branch reform of relationship recognition legislation, including the Marriage Act, including the Civil Unions Act. Replace the Marriage Act with something that defines different kind of relationships.
I agree with you, but I think same-sex law reform has never occurred in a root and branch way. I think that, unfortunately, reform has occurred in more frustratingly and incrementally, and I'm not saying that that's the best way for it to happen.
But don't you think, with the logjam beginning to break in the states and more states enacting gay marriage and all the rest of it, that it's actually time for a kind of Damascus moment for Kevin Rudd, and that he takes a great leap of faith into the future and says, no, I'm going to reform the whole lot. I'm going to chuck out the Marriage Act. I'm going to chuck out...
Doug, sorry, I'm going to stop you there. There is no way that I would support you in chucking out the Marriage Act. The Californian Supreme Court asked the exact same question last year when they made their decision. Both the homosexual side and the straight religious side said no way. There is too much symbolic reasons associated with the symbolic aspect of getting married.
Yeah, but take it out of the law. Leave all that with the churches and just recognise unions.
So then you're going to have somebody who can go and have a religious marriage being respected in society higher.
But not recognised by the government.
No, but you're going to have somebody in society recognised higher because they're married in a religion than somebody who's going to be civil unioned in law. I don't agree with that.
You need to have an equal environment.
It happens overseas now. People don't recognise civil unions equally with marriage. So I, for the record, don't support throwing out the Marriage Act.
Okay, look, we're going to have to leave this one here because we do want to have a chat with John Klopproger from Marriage Equality as well to get his viewpoint on this. Obviously, this is an argument that's going to go round and on and on, and hopefully we'll eventually get somewhere with it. Michael, thank you very much for your time tonight.
And thanks for all the work you're doing.
Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. That was Michael Vaughan from Rainbow Labour New South Wales, and apologies for giving him a bit of a hard time there. Couple more messages have come through here. Thank you for responding. You know how to do that. Contrary to the other caller, says this person, don't write off the Liberals. There are a lot of Liberals like myself who are wets, and if they're hungry enough to govern, it's amazing how things change. That's Tree from North Fitzroy. And someone wants to know, what's the difference between a civil union and a marriage? Well, I personally would argue there isn't one. A marriage is simply a form of civil union, but there we go. And by the way, Liberal does not mean Howard. This is from Tree in North Fitz again. Rudd is as religious as Howard ever was.
You sure this isn't Tim Wilson?
I doubt it. I don't think he's talking to me today, since I argued with him online this morning about Ronald Reagan being the worst president in American history. You think he's one of the best. Okay. We now have John Klobroger from Australian Marriage Equality on the line. Good evening, John.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Long time no speak. We've just been chatting with Michael Vaughan from Rainbow Labour and arguing about this whole thing about whether we should be pushing for civil unions or marriage or both. What's your take on this?
Well, I oppose a national civil union scheme because basically I want same-sex couples to be able to have full equality. No apologies, no exceptions, and civil unions simply aren't equality. And by advocating for civil unions, you jeopardise our chances of actually getting marriage equality anytime soon.
John, what are your thoughts on the argument that, well, you know, it is a stepping stone that, okay, maybe our listeners are correct that we do have a religious government, that Rudd is as equally as religious as Howard, you know, that a gay marriage is just not going to fly in the next 5 years, 10 years, whenever, and that civil unions is one step forward to reaching that goal?
Well, I actually do think marriage equality will fly, and a lot sooner than most people seem to think, because the majority of Australians actually support marriage equality. The last poll, a Galaxy poll, said 57%, and this figure has probably only increased since then. And civil unions are only marginally more accepted than marriage itself, so than same-sex marriage, because a 2008 Queensland Galaxy poll found that only 6% more people supported civil union over a marriage. And as I think Corey was alluding to before, perhaps that's because those people don't actually think we're equal.
Okay, Corey, you want to come in here?
I'm just going to play devil's advocate here, John. What do you say to a person living in Queensland, in New South Wales, Northern Territory, South Australia and WA, where they have no prospect of not having to show all this paperwork to prove their de facto status? What do you say to them if the ALP is willing to do civil unions to be able to give them a form of formal recognition, but they're not willing to be able to do marriage? Why are you saying to them that they can't get access to this particular institution that's potentially on the table?
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually think that the campaign for relationship registers or civil unions at the state level is actually progressing. I mean, we've seen Tasmania, they started with it, Victoria, the ACT, and it's beginning to be debated in Queensland and New South Wales.
Yeah, but it's pretty much come to a dead stop there. There's a lot of local opposition in those various governments. There doesn't seem to be much prospect of anything happening.
And let's go back to the question. What would you say to somebody living in those states if the Labor Party offered this and you're saying we shouldn't do it?
Well, I would say that we shouldn't do it because it is a step backwards. I actually do think that we would be better off in the long run if we actually take the plunge and actually campaign for marriage. Civil unions at the federal level is a step backwards, and I think Australia is ready for marriage equality.
Well, that's an interesting point of view, John. I'm not sure that there's an awful lot of people who agree with you. We got a message here from Ant saying, you guys are being so naive, there's no way the government would throw out marriage and replace it with a secular civil union scheme for gays and straights, which is what we were talking about earlier on. You're saying you think the government will or could be persuaded to change the Marriage Act and give us marriage?
Frankly, I think that's up to us.
Well, any kind of time frame do you think that would happen within?
Well, I hope that it will be discussed at the upcoming ALP National Conference. You know, we might start debating it then, whether it will be adopted or not. maybe we'll have to wait till the next one.
But basically you're saying if we argue for civil unions, what we're doing is actually pushing out the timeline for marriage even further.
Yeah.
Or possibly even pushing it off the table altogether.
Exactly. And when you're talking about a civil union scheme, if you accept a national civil union scheme instead of state-based schemes, you're looking at creating a whole new scheme, which will only... It will take another 4 to 5 years before it's in place, by which time marriage will be so overwhelmingly supported. And you know, in the meantime, 4 to 5 years before you get a civil union scheme, it's added to that. You have the problem of whether it's actually a constitutionally acceptable in Australia. I mean, as you know, marriage is actually...
Yes, and at the end of the day, it's not equality. And the argument is not about marriage. The argument is about equality, as I keep saying.
Yes.
And what we should be arguing for is equality, and equality equals marriage. Anything other than marriage does not equal equality.
Yep.
And
no,
therefore,
such thing as separate and equal.
Exactly. John, we're going to have to leave it there because we've had a very lively evening tonight and we're running a bit low on time. Best of luck with your efforts to persuade people, and let's keep our fingers crossed for the Labour Party conference.
And yes, the National Day of Action on the 1st of August.
You
can go to equallove.info.
Okay, we will do that. Thanks, John.
Great.
You're listening to The Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9. Now, I thought we would find the different generations split on the marriage question, and we have sort of heard hints around that. But it seems the generations are less split than we think. Que Sera has been exploring intergenerational relations and brings us this report from Beneath the Bonnet.
All started midweek at a certain Commercial Road venue that shall remain anonymous in the interests of community etiquette. Now, normally I wouldn't be seen dead midweek in such a venue. Much rather sit at home in front of the tally and work on my needlepoint. But I learned long ago that it is a foolish queen indeed who turns down a paid gig midweek in this sullen town. Anyway, some time back, I'd come to the conclusion that the gulf between the generations was insurmountable, particularly in our community. We had our music, our fashions, our icons, our causes. They have none. I'm talking about Generation Y, but you could throw Generation X in with the mix. You see, I'd long turned my back on these young queer things. Let them salivate over their new phones and leave me in peace to dust off my Betty Davis videos. And I mean videos. Let them talk Kylie and the Pussycat Dolls and Lady Bloody Gaga. I've got Judy, Barbara, Shirley and Bette. Midler, that is. Let them gush over the latest perversely overpriced distressed t-shirt and low-cut, undie-advertising, pubic hair-grazing denims. I've got my new sewing machine with no less than 100 new stitches and the time to perfect the art of the lycra-padded pussy bow. Okay, that last one is absurd, but you get my drift. Generation Y. Ha! Wouldn't give them the time of day if their iPhone thingy was busted and they were late for a teeth-whitening session at the High Street Dental Clinic. As far as I was concerned, we did not speak the same language, so why bother? No point me going off on a tangent around Stonewall and Judy and the birth of the contemporary gay movement while they're blabbing about the latest alco-pop mix and a $600,000 mortgage on a one-bedroom unit in Windsor. Please, spare me. But last Wednesday, all that changed. I tell you, I am a reformed queen. You see, I got to talking with a couple of young things, and I mean really young. We're talking 19, 20, 21-year-olds, and to my surprise, we actually had something to say to each other. One lovely couple had exchanged rings after only 6 months and were planning on formalising the bond. I suggested that unless we get gay marriage in this country, they may as well take along the pet pooch and ask to be microchipped at the same time. They agreed. We had a bit of a laugh at the crisis of imagination of the commercial gay scene. They complimented me on my powder pink bouffant. I complimented them on their lovely sneakers. It was a very fruitful exchange, and can I say the word fabulous was uttered by all parties numerous times, which supports my current theory that the F word is the magic key to the other side. Don't understand what the young'uns are talking about? Just
just say fabulous and smile and all is forgiven. So there you have it. Generation Y and X are with us after all. Good thing too, because, you see, our time is now. The AFL have expanded the anti-vilification code to include sexuality. Radio National's Fran Kelly is on the case for gay marriage. President Obama has done everything but throw on his leather chaps and parade down San Francisco's Castro District. Our time is now. I'm Kay Sarar, and I can tell you I'm feeling pretty good about my next needlepoint project. An embroidered no hate hanky for Kevin. Kay Sarar.
As you might know, Kay's been participating in the No Hate project, which is why that gets a plug in there. That's it for another week. My guests tonight were Brian Walsh of the AFL, Education Minister Bronwyn Pike, Michael Vaughan from Rainbow Labour, John Kloprogger, Australian Marriage Equality, and in the studio, Cathy Anderson, Rob Mitchell and Corey Earlham. The programme was produced by Bianca Johnston, technical production by Michael Bayliss. I'm Doug Pollard, and I'll see you again next week with another edition of The Rainbow Report.
This has been a Joy 94.9 News and Current Affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.